Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Welcome back to another episode of Right Here in Mass. Joining me today is Susan Trotter, who's a relationship coach who is passionate about helping people to feel confident and empowered in their lives. She has expertise in dating, relationships, and divorce, with a special interest in the areas of mindset and communication. Susan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ashley, for having me. I'm excited to be here.
And I'm excited to have you here. For our listeners, Susan's extensive and very impressive full bio is in the show notes, but Susan, I would love to start off by giving you the opportunity to share more about yourself and what you do.
Sure, thank you. So I started my career as a clinical psychologist. I practiced as a therapist for over 20 years. And I will add, I decided when I was 15 years old that I wanted to be a therapist and just went for it. And so I had my own practice for a number of years. Life took lots of twists and turns. I thought I would be a therapist in private practice my whole career. And post-divorce and after move and so forth, I found myself wanting to do something different and discovered the field of coaching and just fell in love with it and decided I would pursue coaching. And I made that shift midlife. And over time really became clear that the core of my work was really about our relationship with ourselves and then with other people. And so I came to identify myself as a relationship coach. Having the clinical background is part of actually what makes me unique as a coach. I find it really helpful in the work I do with my clients. But I work exclusively as a relationship coach now. And then, as you mentioned, I have these specialties. I help people in relationships who want to improve communication and connection. I help people thinking about or going through divorce to navigate that process. And then I have expertise in helping people who are single and dating learn how to successfully navigate the dating world.
I love it. And so transitioning from being a therapist to a relationship coach, I'm curious to hear what that transition was like. As you mentioned, your clinical background definitely plays a big role in what you do. But what was that overall process like of just shifting your focus from one thing to another?
Yeah, it was definitely a process, especially because, as I said, I thought I would practice as a therapist forever. And at that point, I was working at a nonprofit and I had moved back to Massachusetts after being away for a long time. And so I just needed to get licensed and thought I'd continue on my merry way. And that wasn't happening. So it was a mindset shift for me to go from thinking about being a therapist to becoming a coach. There was a lot of curiosity about it, like, how are they similar? How are they different? And, you know, there's overlap and they are also very different. Just really understanding it. I started my coaching practice while I was still at the nonprofit, and I did that for a while, as a lot of us entrepreneurs do. Sometimes we're in a job and then we start a business. And then for me, I had reached that tipping point where I couldn't expand my coaching practice anymore while I was still working at the other job. I didn't have time or energy or capacity. And so I took that leap and just didn't look back. And like a lot of people, once I took the leap and, you know, the sky didn't fall in, I was okay. Then I wish I had done it sooner, for sure. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely just a process in terms of my thinking about it. One of the other things I think you'll find interesting, when I was practicing as a therapist with my own practice, I thought of it as a clinical practice, not a business. It was only when I became a coach and started my coaching business that I had that shift in my thinking. And it was a 180. I mean, it was completely different how I thought about it, how I approached it, and what I did. It was fascinating to just observe myself and the shift as I made that change.
That's an interesting point that you bring up there about having a change in mindset of thinking about it from just a practice, now a business. Do you mind going a little bit deeper into that, into what that differentiator was, or how exactly your mindset shifted on that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. I was doing a networking call with Alyssa Knapp just before this, and we were talking about this a little bit. So when I was practicing as a therapist, I mean, a lot of my clients came through insurance. I accepted insurance at the time. I didn't really need or feel the need to do marketing. I just kind of put up my shingle and the clients came through referral, through insurance or word of mouth. And I was pretty busy. The practice of psychology is also bound by a lot of rules and laws and guidelines, right? And so, I was very mindful, and there were a lot of rules about like how you can promote yourself as a psychologist or not, and you can't kind of reach out to get clients and so forth. And so it was just very rigid, honestly. And so I think I was actually kind of nervous about that part when I was practicing as a therapist. And so I didn't do any marketing. And it's interesting because I had somebody, who was in sales and marketing would tell me, like, oh, you could do this, you could do that. And I'd be like, no, I can't do those things. As a coach, it was like everything opened up. And it actually didn't really take that much effort and, to get there. It just kind of happened. And it was exciting to me. I actually love the business part of having a coaching practice. And I love supporting other people who are starting out and sharing my journey, kind of what worked for me. And I will say I've taken kind of a non-traditional route to building my practice. I'm happy to share more about that. But I just loved learning about business. I didn't know anything about it. Nobody, we didn't study it in grad school, like how to run a business, even though a private practice was a business back in the day. And I just loved learning about it and just jumping in. And it was just so freeing, actually.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned the freeing part because that was one thing that came to mind for me is really it sounds like you had endless opportunities. And I feel like you not having like the knowledge beforehand about how to run a business probably again opened you up to new ideas that people might not normally think of if they had had that business experience, so to say. It's almost like you're not biased towards it or have all this stuff. You're just fresh out the gate with all these new ideas.
And like there were no, like I didn't have or feel any restrictions or constrictions that I had felt before as a therapist. And I think I had good instincts, which led me to make certain choices that really helped me get my business off the ground and over time to help it to grow and thrive ultimately.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that point about taking a non-traditional way for being able to grow your business. And so I'm curious to hear what that is and what exactly you did.
So at the very beginning, I mean, some of what I did was common, but at the very beginning, I just said yes to everything. So I was networking all the time. I was at events, I was connecting with people. I just said yes, just as a way to really connect with the community at large. And then I also looked for opportunities where I might be able to present, from, whether it was about relationships or divorce or whatever it was. The non-traditional part, was me really not doing all the things that people say you should do. I remember I didn't have a website, but I was going to be speaking at a conference, the Metro West Conference for Women. And I didn't want people to only have my Facebook page to go to. So I created a landing page and I thought, okay, well, I'll just put this up and then I'll build it out. 11 plus years later, like I actually still haven't built it out. And I think about it, like I'd like to do that. It would be nice to have more for people to read and go to and so forth. And I just haven't gotten to it. I contribute to a lot of articles. But I'm not blogging regularly. I'm on social media a lot, but I don't kind of follow the rules of, three times a week and different kinds. And I don't even know what the rules are. You're the expert in that. So maybe you can give me some hints. But I just didn't really do all those things that, most business coaches or people with expertise like you have would say, this is what will help you. I think what I did is I networked a lot. I found avenues to not sell myself, but to like share information that showed my value to people, like what I have to offer. I mean, I teach webinars and I used to do workshops, and oftentimes like I'll forget to promote myself at the end, because I just get excited about sharing information that's going to help people. And then the other thing, but what I did do in terms of as particularly social media is just show up to support other people, to share resources, to connect people. I'm a connector by nature, and given the nature of the work I do, I also like to support people. And so I just showed up consistently in that way. And I think over time, people got to know me through those kinds of avenues, and understood what I did. And so that then developed kind of more of that organic piece and led to more word of mouth kind of referrals. The third thing, so it's networking, it's just showing up consistently to support other people. And then the third thing I did, is that I align myself with organizations who shared my values and whose mission aligned with mine, and that became and those organizations became good referral sources for me as well. And so, I didn't do kind of all the things, but I kind of developed my own process that ended up working, thankfully, really well for me. And I think allowed me to present myself in a really authentic way, which I think is so important because, especially in this kind of work, like I'm my brand, like people want to
Yes.
either work with me or they don't want to work with me. And I think, it becomes essential then for me to present myself to the world in a really authentic way, so we can assess whether or not it's the right fit.
Absolutely. And that single landing page that you still have 11 years later is such a testament to the work that you've done to showcase your credibility and your expertise, which is really what you alluded to in terms of how you've been able to grow your coaching business and being able to make all these different relationships. And it reminds me of one of my favorite quotes, and I forget who said this, but it's the concept of the best kind of marketing doesn't feel like marketing. And so really what you've done with networking and building relationships and joining like-minded organizations, those are forms of marketing in a sense, but really it's at the core of those human connections. And that's, of course, where you thrive and where you excel in.
Absolutely. Like it, I mean, I'm a relationship coach and my marketing has been all about relationships, 100%. I don't know that I could have done it any other way, honestly. It just felt most right for me, and thankfully it worked to help me
Yes.
grow my business and be able to reach people and impact people.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you brought up the point about joining organizations because I feel like some people kind of tend to forget about that, thinking about like the collaborative approaches that they can take. And so I also know that one struggle that people might have when they're thinking about joining organizations is that it's almost like analysis paralysis. Like there's so many groups. How do you know which one to choose? How do you know how to dedicate enough time to it and get the most out of it and whatnot? And so knowing that you've had so much success in a handful of groups, what's your recommendations around that for just finding the right places and then also being able to get the right bang for your buck, so to say?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, like, not all groups that I've joined did I continue in, right? Like, there is some trial and error. And, sometimes you just need to jump in and see what it's about. And sometimes it might work for a little while and then it might not be working after a period of time. And that's okay too. I mean, I've had some groups that I've been in where, I joined, I signed up, I was paying a fee. For maybe a year or two. And then I was like, it's not working for me on a lot of different levels. And so it's time to go. I think it's good to, for people who might be new in business, like to observe for a little bit, some of these groups and organizations and get a sense of how they work. I think looking for opportunities to kind of be a guest, whether it's at an event or at a meeting, so that you can get even more of a flavor of the business. I'm very also value-based in my work. And I think that part is really important, whether you're collaborating with other entrepreneurs or with organizations. I think it's re just like any relationship. I always tell, my dating clients, like, shared values is foundational for a good, healthy relationship. And that's true for all kinds of relationships. So I think it's really important for people to do their research and understand what the values are that different organizations may abide by, function on, and make sure that that aligns with your own as well. The other thing, like, there are so many business focused organizations, and those are great. I know you and I are in a lot of the same groups and so forth. Again, some of it may be trial and error. But the other thing that's been really beneficial for me as well is showing up a lot in community groups. So, like, your town groups or your general regional groups and so forth. And there's so many different groups out there. But one of the things that's also, excuse me, helped me, and this wasn't intentional, but I've become kind of like a community resource for people. I have a very extensive referral list, and it's kind of my own version of Angie's List without being monetized yet. But I just people have come to know me as somebody who, like, has a person or people to refer, like, for a million different things. And I again, I'd like to say it was intentional, but it just kind of happened because of my connecting kind of nature. And so it's another way that I've become more known, actually. Like, people reach out to me for anything and everything you can imagine, and not just clients. So getting involved in community groups in different ways, I think, is another really great value add for people trying to figure out how to get more exposure, more visibility.
Absolutely. And I think what you've shared here is such an important approach to take in business is the whole notion of giving before expecting to get. Because as you've
Absolutely.
seen throughout this time, being able to put all of this support and help out into the world has, of course, come back in other ways. But without you intentionally or purposely seeking that, you
Right.
genuinely have just wanted to help people and be able to provide those resources to them. But it has come back in other ways, which is really wonderful.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I run a business and I need to make money, right? I mean, let's be real about that. But I lead truly with my heart, and my passion is in helping people. It's been that from childhood, really, actually. And I think when you lead with kind of authenticity and meaning, then it shows, and people end up wanting to work with you.
Yes.
So yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. And for anyone who's listening to this episode who it may be following a similar career path to you, where they are a therapist and perhaps looking to break out and start their own coaching business, you brought up a great point earlier about starting your practice while you were working at that nonprofit. But what other advice would you give to someone who might be in those same shoes or following a similar path with just getting started?
Yeah, it's so interesting. There are a lot of therapists who have thought about or have made the shift to coaching, or are offering both. And I think part of that is just the landscape around insurance has made the practice of therapy much more challenging. It's part of what contributed to my shift. And I've actually years ago did a meeting with several therapists who were interested in shifting to coaching. So I thought a lot about this and even thought about doing some works, offering some groups actually for folks. I think, one, it's really important to do your research and understand what coaching is all about and understand, first of all, just from a practice point of view, how therapy and coaching are different. Give thought to whether you want to offer both or just focus on coaching if that's the move that you're going to make. But again, it is really important to understand where the line is. There are some similarities and they're also very different. I have a lot of clients who I work with as a coach who are also in therapy. Sometimes I'll refer them to therapy for other things. And sometimes, I'll do a consultation with somebody and think therapy is a better path for them, not coaching at this time. And it's important to know when to do that. And then just really understanding the business part of it, what you can do, because again, I mean, fewer therapists are taking insurance these days. More people are private pay. But I do think that it just is really important to understand from a business perspective, how to develop and grow a coaching practice. And then there's the mindset piece too. I think again, coaching is such a huge field now. I mean, it's been around a really long time, but it's really skyrocketed, I think, in the last 10 years. But I think there is that mindset shift that people need to make, if they want to shift from becoming a therapist to a coach and to take the time to do that work individually.
Yes, absolutely. And on the topic of mindset, I'd love to dive more into how you made that mindset shift because, I mean, I feel like for me personally, I still struggle with mindset. I feel like it's something that business owners are just always going to have in some capacity is a challenge with that. And so I'd love to hear more about how you've been able to move that in a more positive direction.
Yeah, well, I love the topic of mindset, and it underscores, as you said in my intro, a lot of the work that I do, like regardless of whether I'm helping people with dating or divorce or relationships or business, at some point we're going to end up talking about mindset. So for me personally, I was really struggling for a bit when I was still working as a therapist. I was in a position I didn't really love what I was doing at the time. It wasn't paying really enough for me long term. But I didn't really know what else I was going to do. And as I said, then I discovered the field of coaching, and that was a game changer for me. And it was still like a process. I needed to work with my own therapist and my own coach. To really help me kind of get there, I think initially, not knowing a lot about coaching, I had some biases, internal unconscious biases about it that I needed to confront and work through. What does it mean that I'm giving up in my mind? I was giving up what I had spent my life training for and doing as a psychologist and therapist. What did that mean for me? And just processing the letting go of that and feeling good, not just okay about it, but feeling good about it as I moved on to something different. And then there's just, I mean, as entrepreneurs, as you said, like there's all the mindset stuff, like who am I, and all the imposter syndrome issues that come up for people, and how do I do this, and what makes me different or better or whatever, what can I do to be successful? And it's an ongoing process. I mean, I coach my clients and I teach about mindset all the time. I'm very focused on language, the words that we use with ourselves, like in our own heads or out loud. I think words are really powerful. And so I'm regularly paying attention to how I'm talking to myself throughout this journey, and the words that I use. And I always say I'm human first. I don't get it right 100% of the time, and I always tell my clients that too. Like, you're going to make mistakes, you're going to falter sometimes, and that's okay. The question is, what do you then do with that? Do you get stuck in the faltering, the questioning, the self-criticism and so forth, or do you rise up and get the support that you need to help yourself shift from that? And even if people, not just falter maybe in how they're talking to themselves or how they're feeling, but even if you have failures in business, and I'll put failures in quotes again, I truly believe that those are lessons for us, that, when things are going along smoothly, we just kind of go along for the ride. It's really when we hit bumps in the road that we pause and reflect, and it's often when we seek out help. And it's those moments in our lives, whether it's personally or in business, that I think have the greatest opportunities for growth and change. And I think Sometimes it's hard to see that or feel that in the moment, when you're in the thick of it. And if you can tuck that away and keep that in mind, it can really help you through those rough patches that we all have had or will have in our businesses at some point.
Oh yes. Oh my gosh, you gave such great advice there. And I love everything you shared, and especially the point that you brought up about how you're very mindful of how you're talking about yourself or what you're thinking about yourself, because it's so true. I've been taking a mastermind for the past few weeks, and that's one thing that the facilitator keeps hitting home is being incredibly mindful and aware of your thoughts, like your feelings, what you're saying about yourself, and being really intentional about redirecting those as they come up if they're negative. And it's really hard to do, but when
Right.
you are able to be consistent about that, I feel like I've noticed a difference in that. And I think that was just a really good point that you shared, because it's the whole notion of thoughts become things. So negative
Right.
thoughts happen and positive thoughts
Right.
happen.
Right. And the thing is that we have a choice. Like, we can't control, there are lots of things in life we don't have control over. We can actually control and change how we think. And like, that changes how we feel, it changes what we do, it changes the results that we get, the outcomes. So our thoughts, I say this all the time in all my teachings, like, our thoughts are so powerful. And the thing that people need to remember is that they have the ability to change their thoughts. And it actually connects to like neural connections in our brains and so forth. Like, we have the power to make that happen. And it is really hard, as you say, because we have millions of thoughts a day. Like, we're not always aware. And the first step is just trying to notice when we have those thoughts that aren't serving us very well, and then replacing them. Even if you don't believe it 100%, it just has to be possible. And then doing it over and over again. And that's how we actually shift our thinking or our mindset. It's through that repetition. Yeah, it's so powerful. And the other piece with that too, I was just thinking that, I mean, when I first started out, like, I remember the very first workshop, dating workshop that I taught. It was at my friend's house. I was so nervous when I used to present. I wasn't a natural public speaker at the beginning. I was nervous all the time. I said a lot of ums and likes, and I had pages and pages of notes in front of me like a security blanket. And I did it anyway. And I think that that's the other piece. Being an entrepreneur requires a lot of bravery, actually, and a lot of courage. And sometimes it's being afraid to do it and doing it anyway. And I think most times you will feel better having done it than not. And I think that can be helpful for people to keep in mind too.
I fully agree. For anyone who's watching this video, they might see my sign in the back, which is one of my absolute favorite
Oh.
quotes, which is get comfortable with the uncomfortable. And so you're totally speaking my language there, because like you said, entrepreneurship is all about getting uncomfortable, whether it's public speaking or trying to focus more on sales or anything else. It's all about stepping outside of your comfort zone. But like you shared, Susan, you'll be so glad that you did it and being able to take
Right.
that leap of faith.
Absolutely. I remember when the pandemic started, I can't remember how we got connected, but somebody from one of the local news stations reached out to me to do a segment about how to weather the pandemic, kind of in terms of relationships. I'd never been on Zoom. I'd never been on TV. I was so nervous, and it was like an hour later she wanted to get on Zoom and do it, and I just said yes. I just didn't even allow myself to think about it. I just said yes, and I will say I didn't do a great job. Like, what I said was okay, but my voice was really high because I was nervous. I didn't know where to look, and so my eyes were not focus where they should be. They didn't use a lot of me in the segment. They use like stock photos and video and so forth with my voice overlay. I'm still so glad that I did it. It got me over that hurdle, and again, the sky didn't fall in. It was okay. It was good enough, and it was a first time doing it, and I learned a lot from it. And I still cringe when I look at it, but I try not to look at it too much. So, but it's a great example of being so scared to do something and doing it anyway. And even if it's not perfect, it's good enough, and it's a step along the way. of growth, for growth and opportunity. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that alludes to one of my mantras that I always try to remind myself, which is done is better than perfect, which is hard for me being a type A perfectionist, but sometimes you just need to rip the band-aid off and do it and then work through it later. I mean, if you try to wait to do something until it's absolutely perfect, you might never do it in that case.
Absolutely. I totally relate to what you just said. I'm somebody who tends to be type A perfectionist also. And yes, it's like that what you were saying earlier, that analysis paralysis, right? If you just sit and think about it, you might never do it. And that doesn't help you or anybody else that you could be impacting by putting yourself out there.
Yes, absolutely. And so to dive a little bit more into your work specifically, you had shared, and as I mentioned, this is all in your bio, but you focus a lot on supporting people with relationships with themselves, romantic relationships, relationships with others, business relationships. But I'm curious to hear maybe specific scenarios or examples of exactly that type of work that you do and how you can support people.
Good question. So, a lot of the work that I do has to do with, as I said, our relationship with ourselves. So self-esteem, self-confidence, mindset, all of those things. And again, that comes up in a lot of different realms with people, whether I'm working with individuals in divorce or around dating, or if I'm working with couples, which I do a lot of couples work now as well. So that, as I said, is just kind of foundational. It's interesting. I think, throughout my career as a therapist and then as a coach, like I've always worked with people. I've helped people in divorce, I've helped couples, I've helped individuals. The pandemic, I think, really put a spotlight on relationships in a lot of different ways. And I think, for people who are in relationships and there might have been some small cracks, it kind of, widened those cracks. And so to that end, I've really seen an uptick in the number of couples reaching out for support. Sometimes I'll work with people individually who want help with their relationship. Sometimes that happens for a variety of different reasons. Sometimes people feel like they have some of their own stuff they need to address first, and or their partner may not be open to coming in to doing the work too. But I do a lot of couples work, and when I work with couples, I initially do an individual session with each of them in order to get more of their history. Even though coaching doesn't focus as much on the past, we don't get where we are in a vacuum, and understanding their history gives me a larger context for understanding them, and that can be helpful in the work that we do together. It depends on where I'm just talking specifically about couples, but where they are. I have seen a lot of young couples coming in, married, sometimes with very young kids. They're in that busy phase of life. They still really love each other, and they just can't quite figure out how to carve out time for the relationship. And I love seeing all these young couples coming in and wanting to figure that out early. So that they don't become those midlife couples whose kids are launched and they don't know each other anymore and they just don't know what to do. But couples come in for all kinds of reasons, but it's usually about connection, communication and connection. Those are the two really major issues that come up for people. I mean, there are sometimes other issues to address that have to do maybe with infidelity or money or other things. But communication and connection are usually underlying a lot of that. And so, we focus on that. I mean, we talk about it in the sessions, and they also get homework sometimes of sorts. There may be articles to read, there might be exercises for them to do, things for them to practice and try to integrate that we've talked about, that I want them to try to start trying to incorporate in their everyday life. And with couples, sometimes they think, oh, in order for us to feel more connected, we have to plan a date night, and it needs to be this big, elaborate date night. And really, it's in the little moments in everyday life that you are nurturing the relationship. It's, greeting each other, hello and goodbye. It's looking for opportunities to connect. It's acknowledging each other. It's being respectful of each other. There's a couple therapists, psychologist John Gottman and his wife Julie. They've done a lot of work in the relationship realm, and they talk a lot about how, in any given opportunity, we have a choice to respond in a way that moves us away from somebody, against somebody, or towards somebody. And, against somebody is creating conflict, away from somebody is creating distance, and moving towards somebody is about connection. And so it might be something as simple as, you're on your laptop, you're in the middle of something, and your partner comes in and says, "Oh, I got to tell you something." And you have a choice. You can ignore them, which is going to create some distance. You can snap at them. "Can't you see I'm in the middle of something?" and move away from them. Or you can say, "Hey, I really want to hear what you have to say. Can you just give me 1 minute so I can finish this email?" And then I'm all ears. Like a total game changer when you look for those small moments, and that can help build connection. For people going through divorce, like sometimes people are thinking about it, but not quite ready to take that step. And so I do also help individuals and couples have the conversation or guide them in making the decision that's best for them and their family, which obviously is a really big decision. And then for people who might be going through divorce, it's about helping them both on practical levels as well as emotional levels, and really helping them find ways to manage all the emotions that, so that they don't get in the way of the important decisions they need to make about their assets and their children. And then on a practical level, helping them get organized, connecting with the right professionals, and just in a lot of different ways. Communication too. I do a lot of communication work sometimes, helping them draft messages to their spouse or their attorney, for example. And then the dating stuff is totally different and really fun. I help people launch dating profiles, pick pictures, write them, all of it. And then also on a higher level, help people identify what they want, what they need, what their patterns are, what's getting in their way of finding whatever it is that they want. So there's a lot of different ways that I help people, and I love doing all of it, honestly.
Yeah, and I think one of the many things that's so powerful about the work that you do is that the customized support piece, or like the customized plan, and how you meet them where they are, because there's so much chatter online about how things like TikTok people use to find diagnoses and help to navigate their own self-care and self-help and whatnot, which is great for just general information. But when working with a professional like you, people get to the root of the problem and have that customized plan and action steps moving forward. And I think that's really great about having people, or you being by people's side to help them through that.
Yeah, absolutely. There are, I often say, like, there's some universal truths in divorce and relationships and dating. And we're all unique, and every situation is unique. And so it isn't one size fits all. And that's why it's really important to take the time to understand people's histories, where they're coming from, to have that context, and then to work alongside them. On an individual or couple basis, depending on their situation. There's no right or wrong way in this regard. Like, there are some coaches who have very structured programs or certain guidelines. Like some coaches or therapists who work with couples might only work with couples who want to put in the work to stay together. And I will do that, but I also offer, it's like discernment coaching, helping people make a decision. Like, a lot of times people are stuck in indecision about their marriages for a really long time. And I think living in limbo for an extended period is not good for anybody. So my approach is just to help people get to a decision, and whatever that is, and then support them along the way once that decision is made. So I like to be flexible in that regard, and for me, I find it works better for my clients.
Absolutely. And for anyone who's listening to this episode who would like to work towards doing the work of improving their relationships, whether it's with themselves, romantically, friends, family, or even a combination of all of them, what's the advice you would give to them for just getting started with this work?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different things people can do. I mean, obviously working with a coach or a therapist can be of great value. And I will often say, just I'm always happy to do a consultation with somebody. It's complimentary. There's no obligation. And so, I think sometimes people feel like if they schedule a consult, then they're committing to something beyond that. And for me, it's just an opportunity to chat and see what recommendations I can make that might be helpful to you. And sometimes people do want to work together right away, but sometimes I might not hear from somebody for a year, So I encourage people to take the time to do the consultations because that can be really powerful and give you some things to work on for yourself before maybe they're ready to commit to doing that kind of work. And there are groups, there are so many books that people can read that are about relationships or self-esteem or confidence or dating or whatever the case might be. People can journal, looking for like accountability partners if that might be helpful to somebody. There are so many different avenues people can take for growth and change. Coach, obviously, I'm a fan of therapy and coaching, but that's truly just one avenue. And all these other things can also help people and or be an adjunct to the more structured work that they might do with a professional.
Yes, absolutely. And as we get closer towards the end of this episode, my favorite question to ask our guests is what their favorite local businesses are to support. So I'm curious to hear what yours might be.
Sure. I'm based in the Metro West area of Massachusetts. And one of my favorite places is a restaurant called Dates and Olives. It's owned by Wren's Mononka. It's a Mediterranean restaurant and it is so delicious. And the hummus is probably the best I've ever had. And she is so connecting. She opens up her restaurant for groups who want to do events there or have group lunches. She does catering and so forth. It's right in downtown Natick. So that's absolutely one of my favorite places to recommend. And I actually recommend it a lot in different groups on Facebook. And then I refer some of my dating clients to photographers to get professional photos to include with their profile, and a couple local photographers that I've recommended and had clients use quite a bit. One is Diana Levine, who has a studio in Natick and Newton, and she does mini sessions, she does headshots, family sessions, more extensive photo shoots as well, and is terrific. And Adriana Copinga is also a photographer in Newton who does a much more kind of intensive process with people, primarily women, but not just women, and is just a really lovely and talented photographer as well. So I could go on and on. I have so many people that I'm connected with whose work I love. And as I said, I have that referral list and I refer people all the time to so many different people, but those are just a couple that come to mind.
I love it. Now I'd love to give you the opportunity to share with our listeners where they can find you online in case they'd like to reach out and connect more about the work that you do.
Great. Yes. So my website slash landing page is susantrotterphd.com. You can also find me on all the social media platforms at Susan Trotter PhD. I'm primarily on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn. I haven't really ventured onto TikTok yet, and I don't do much with Twitter or X, as it's called. My email is susantrotterphd@gmail.com. That's because I'm often in sessions. It's the easiest way to reach out to me, and then I'll follow up. I'm usually pretty good about responding within usually hours, but certainly within a day. So yeah, people can reach me, and as I said, I'm also in a lot of different groups. People can message me through Facebook, they can text me, they can call. So however they want to reach out, whatever works for them, I'll follow up. And in addition to the things I shared that I do working with individuals and couples, I am also getting ready to launch a group program for single dating women, so people can be on the lookout for that. And I Also, I'm going to be launching, hopefully in the next year, some online courses around dating as well. And I have a book written in my head that I haven't put out into the world yet, but that's coming.
Amazing, busy woman you are.
Yes, I am.
Perfect. And I will link to all those places in the show notes that our listeners can easily click through and connect with you from there. But thank you so much again, Susan, for coming on today's show.
Oh, Ashley, thank you so much. I love talking with you, and it's just so lovely to be connected with you through the years. And thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.